You're tuned to Radio Maria, a Christian voice in your home. The following program is a rebroadcast of Salvation is from the Jews with Roy Showman.
Hi, this is Roy Showman, and welcome once again to Salvation is from the Jews, the show on Radio Maria that celebrates the Jewish roots of the Catholic Church, or seen the other way around, that celebrates the fulfillment, the completion, the full realization of all of the promise of Judaism in the Catholic Church and its sacraments. Today, once again, we have the great pleasure and opportunity to have on the show another grateful Jewish entrant into the Catholic Church. I know that we are frequently called converts. I myself, of course, was born and raised Jewish, but I will let my guest speak for himself, but I think the concept of convert is a bit bizarre, because I was Jewish before I entered the Catholic Church. I realized, came to the realization, that Jesus was in fact the Jewish Messiah, and he left behind his church as the transformation and fulfillment of Judaism. And so if I was Jewish before I became a follower of the Jewish Messiah, why should I cease to be Jewish when I become a follower of the Jewish Messiah? If anything, I should be more Jewish than ever. That's how I feel. I don't know if that's the way our guest will feel. Maybe we'll find out in a few moments. But let me just, I guess, let him introduce himself. Ken, are you there?
I am.
Great. Well, what's a nice Jewish boy like you doing in a place like this?
Well, I'm so glad you asked, Roy. I am very grateful to be in the church, and I've got a little journey that I've been through that maybe can be, if I share it, it'd be a blessing to those who hear it, and maybe encourage those who are on the journey to really complete the journey, you know. Even though none of us are really completed until we're taken home, we're still on the journey, but at least come into the church and join the Catholic Church. So where do you want me to begin, Roy?
Well, begin at the beginning. You were born and raised Jewish. Where, what kind of family, what kind of religious observance, what happened?
Sure. Well, I was born in Long Island, New York, and I was born to Jewish parents, and really had a very much of a Jewish upbringing. I grew up in a very Jewish neighborhood. We moved to when I was very young, we moved into a very Jewish neighborhood, sprinkled with a few Italians maybe. But pretty much all of my friends growing up in my formative years were almost exclusively all Jewish. And I didn't know any different until junior high school. And then life, you know, changed a little bit because instead of being the majority, I was now part of a very small minority. And it was rather a rude awakening, I would say. But I had a very Jewish upbringing. I became a bar mitzvah when I was 13. And
conservative, reform, what?
Yeah, we were reform. So most of my friends went to the conservative synagogue in the neighborhood. My parents didn't feel very comfortable there for whatever reason. So we and a bunch of other folks ended up in the Reform synagogue. We call it the Reform Temple. And that's where I was bar mitzvahed, and that's where I was confirmed. And then soon after my confirmation, which took place, I think, when I was a sophomore in high school, I pretty much went my own way. My parents were fairly non-observant. We were cultural, we were Jewish culturally. I was probably more serious about my faith than I can say my parents were at the time. Although I did enjoy going to the high holidays with my dad, those were very, very fond memories.
Let me ask a question, because most of our listeners are goyim. Even though your parents were not very observant, was it important to them that they were Jewish? Was the Jewish identity important to them?
Yes, very much so. Very much so. You know, later on, I would learn, Roy, that this was much later on. This was really after my my grandfather on my mother's side passed away. I learned that he actually was not brought up Jewish. My grandmother was Jewish, so that made me Jewish, right? My mom had a Jewish mom, and I had a Jewish mom, so that pretty much takes care of that. But interestingly enough, even at my bar mitzvah, my grandfather said a prayer. He learned the prayer, and I really did not even know that he did not grow up Jewish. So our Jewish identity was very, very much a part of my upbringing. But a religious observance on a more traditional setting was not part of my upbringing. Okay. When I got to junior high school, Roy, something strange happened. I noticed that I was part of a minority, and there was a tremendous amount of anti-Semitism that I experienced. There were many times I walked through school, I did not feel safe. I was called names, I was spit at, I didn't understand this. You know, this was very foreign to me. And of course, I was familiar with the Holocaust and so on and so forth, but I had never experienced this kind of hatred before. And I must admit that a lot of the folks who were kind of anti-Semitic and mean, many of them were Christian and Catholic. So that did not help me in my development as a spiritual person, and so as I began to progress through high school and so forth, and college especially, I began to look into a lot of Eastern religions and Eastern philosophy and so on and so forth, because I just didn't feel like there was a safe place for me to be in the Christian setting in the Western world, which I looked at as more of a Christian setting. So that's pretty much my upbringing. And then things changed. I met my lovely wife, who was not Jewish. She was a nice Italian Sicilian young lady, and I fell madly in love with her, and we decided that we were going to get married. And at this point, Roy, my parents really didn't have a big problem with it. Even her parents didn't have a big problem with it, interestingly enough. And her parents did nothing but love me and accept me, and the same thing from my parents, from my wife. And in fact, we spent a couple of years going to a Unitarian Universalist church, and that was nice because we met other couples who were mixed from Christian and Catholic and Jewish backgrounds. But there really wasn't any spiritual meat there. It was just more of a social situation, and it wasn't very satisfying to me. So my wife and I just floundered spiritually. And then God got our attention through kind of miraculous settings. My wife and I were having difficulty getting pregnant, and we finally decided that we were going to adopt our first child. And the day we found out that my adopted son was born, that we also found out that my wife was pregnant. And so it was absolutely miraculous. However, what happened was on Christmas Eve, we were visiting my wife's parents, and about 6 months into the pregnancy, and unfortunately we lost our child. And this was after many, many years of trying. Of course, we already had our adopted son, which we were absolutely thrilled. But it was still a very, very sad time, very earth-shattering. And then the following year, we got pregnant again. But again, in about 5.5 months into the pregnancy, again, on Christmas Day,
wow,
my wife went to the hospital, and we lost that baby. And then the following Christmas, again, Flora lost her dad, who we were very, very close with.
On Christmas Day also?
On Christmas Day.
I guess you dread Christmas.
Well, Christmas is a lot better than it used to be, but it's been difficult, right? The pain, Roy, and the grief was so intense from these three Christmases and the loss of our children and Flora's dad, that I didn't know how to deal with that grief. There was nothing in my background that allowed me to understand and process this grief and suffering that I was going through. Nothing that I had learned in Judaism, nothing I had learned in Eastern philosophy and religions, all of that failed me. All the psychology I had taken in college, it all failed me. It had no answers. It had no solace. It left me empty. And so, just as a means of being able to survive, I would spend literally hours in front of the television, kind of flipping around the channels, so that I wouldn't have to deal with the grief and I wouldn't have to deal with my wife's grief. And one Sunday night, I was flipping through the channels, and I came across a Baptist preacher who was preaching on God's forgiveness and second chances. And at this point, Roy, our marriage was kind of falling apart because of all the grief and the misunderstanding and so on. And we were both very unhappy with our lives and with each other. And I really needed that second chance. I needed somebody to say, you can have a second chance. And this preacher was talking about Jesus. And, you know, Jesus for me was always off limits. That was the last resort, you know, unfortunately. And but when I heard this, my heart was ready to receive it. And I heard the gospel really for the very, very first time, that somebody shared the gospel with me, that shared God's forgiveness and that I could have a second chance and that God loved me and God sent his son and God sent the Messiah. And this was totally, you know, revolutionary to me. And I think instinctively, I said inside, you know, I've tried everything else. I'm going to give this a try now. I'm going to give God a try. I'm going to give this Jesus a try. Maybe this is going to work. And then every Sunday after that, for months, I would turn this preacher back on, and I bought a Bible, and my life was beginning to change. And I could feel God changing my life, lifting the burden of the pain and suffering from me, feeling like I had that second chance. I felt more loving toward my wife. My wife noticed and said and started watching with me. And my wife was obviously from a Catholic background, but you know, she when she heard the message, she said, "Boy, I haven't, you know, why haven't I heard this before?" You know, it seemed new to her. And so we both were watching, and our lives were changing, and we were falling back in love again. And you know, God was working a miracle in our lives. From there, I had to worship God. I had to find a place to worship God. and to learn more about God and to study His Word and to get involved in the work of the church. But I didn't know where to start. I didn't know the difference between Catholics and Protestants and this church and that church. All I wanted to do, I fell in love with Jesus and I just wanted to worship Him. So I quickly learned it was a lot more complicated than that, unfortunately, you know. But we ended up in a Lutheran church, pretty much as a compromise. I don't think my wife would mind me telling the audience that she had been married. She had a really tragic marriage when she was very, very young and ended in divorce. She had not been through an annulment. And I had known enough at that point to know that in order for us to become Catholic, it would involve an annulment. And I didn't see the value in that. I also had some, I must say that the history that I was taught in, you know, a lot of the Jewish history had a lot of you know, I saw the history of lots of persecution and hatred, which I thought came from the Catholic Church. Okay, and I know now it didn't come from the Catholic Church. It came from people maybe who call themselves Catholic, but it didn't come from the Church. But I had this bias. So, you know, we ended up in a Lutheran church, and it was funny, Roy, because here I am in a Lutheran church, mostly German, and mostly blonde hair and blue-eyed, and both my wife and I are, you know, dark-skinned and, you know, dark. I look probably more Italian than Jewish even, and we just felt like, where are all the other people? Where's all my people? Where's all Flora's people? And so it was kind of strange, but we loved that church. We got involved in a shepherding ministry, and it started our journey. It was a wonderful, wonderful experience for us. And then something really strange happened. You could stop me anytime you want to ask a question, but I had a friend at the Lutheran church who was also from a Jewish background. I didn't know this until much later. And he invited us over one night, and we started singing these like Jewish gospel songs. Later on, I learned that they were Messianic Jewish songs. And it ignited something inside of me. It ignited my Jewish identity, and it ignited that, you know, and it made sense to me because here I am, I'm worshiping the Jewish Messiah. I'm worshiping somebody who's one of me, okay? I'm one of Him. And yet, the environment that I'm in is very to my understanding, was kind of non-Jewish. And I'm thinking, what's wrong with this picture? And it made sense to me that I was going to be part of a Messianic Jewish congregation. We visited a Messianic Jewish congregation, and very quickly we got involved and spent about 6 or 7 years, Roy, in one congregation that was absolutely one of the most incredible experiences, other than joining the Catholic Church. Well, was the most exciting part of my faith journey.
For those of our listeners who don't know what Messianic Jewish actually means, what what is a Messianic Jewish congregation?
A Messianic Jewish congregation is a congregation of Jews and Gentiles who worship Jesus in more of a Jewish setting. So we worshiped on Saturday, okay? We observe the Jewish holidays in light of Christ, and we were encouraged to maintain and develop our Jewish identities as Jewish believers in Jesus the Messiah.
So basically, Messianic Jews are Jews who have come to believe that Jesus is the Messiah, but from that point on, it's sort of like a Protestant context in the sense that they have to figure out everything for themselves, and very often think that sort of the Catholic Church or the Gentile Church or the traditional church took a wrong turn, and Jesus wants something that more resembles Judaism with him at the center.
Exactly. That's a perfect explanation. And I wouldn't have known that at that time, because my understanding of Catholic and Protestant was kind of rudimentary. But yes, looking back now, absolutely. And we were part of a Protestant denomination that kind of planted us and supported us and so on and so forth. So we were definitely part of the Protestant world. A lot of our theology was Protestant, certainly not Catholic, okay? And in fact, there was some anti-Catholic sentiment because, believe it or not, just like in every other Protestant church, there were a lot of ex-Catholics. some of them had married Jews who became believers in Jesus. And, you know, as a compromise, they thought this was a safe place for them to be together. And in some ways, you know, there's some truth in that. But there were about six or seven, Roy, absolutely incredible years. We met some very, very dear friends. I learned a lot about the Jewish roots of Christianity, and I learned a lot about, you know, Judaism. I learned a lot about my Jewish roots, and it was a marvelous experience. And yet, something was still missing. I couldn't put my finger on it. Okay, there was a point, Roy, where I would. Toward the end of that 6 or 7 years, there was a point where I would go and sneak into the local Catholic church during Mass. And there was something, now I know it was someone, okay, but there was something different about their liturgy, something different about what was going on. And I began to crave what was happening. Initially I thought maybe it was more liturgical than the style of worship that we had at the Messianic synagogue. But it wasn't just the liturgy, because we went to an Episcopal church and it wasn't the same. Okay. So there were times I would sneak into the back and I didn't know when to stand and sit and genuflect and cross myself. I didn't know any of that. But I wanted communion, and I wanted what these people had, and I knew I couldn't have it. So, we moved from New York to Indianapolis, and we just kind of lost our way a little bit, and we didn't really go anywhere for a while, and kind of got involved in other things, and it was kind of a wilderness experience. Mm-hmm. Until. Flora's mom passed away, and we went to a funeral mass. And that funeral mass, I think, changed my life. Even in Flora's mom's death, God brought life, you know, from that. And there was something special. I could sense that Catholics who had a faith, they had something that I didn't have. They had someone I didn't have, right? Mm-hmm. And exactly the year after her death, I said to my wife, through a set of miraculous circumstances, we met some people who were going to a local Catholic church, and they invited us to church. All they did was invite us, Roy. Okay, they didn't try and preach the gospel. They didn't hit us over the head with any Bibles. They didn't talk about scripture verses. All they did was, do you go to church? And we said no. And they said, well, why don't you come to my church? And they invited us. So on the 1 year anniversary of Flora's mom's death, I said to Flora, let's go to Mass. And she looked at me like I had four heads, Roy. She couldn't believe. She said, do you want to go to Mass? I said, yeah, I want to go to Mass. I want to go to that church where they invited us. So we went to Mass. And it was at that Mass, Roy, that during the consecration, that I had, all I can tell you was it was a mystical experience that I had. And I knew that in the breaking of that bread, later on I knew it was more of like an Emmaus Road experience, but I didn't know that then. But in the breaking of the bread, I knew that it was Jesus, and I knew that the everything that the Catholic Church had taught was absolutely true, and that I had to become Catholic.
Wow.
And when I came home from that Mass, Flora said, "What happened to you?" She couldn't believe it. And I said, "I know I have to become Catholic, Flora. I don't know how. I don't know what that's going to mean." But one of the first things that I did, Roy, when I got home from that Mass was I got on the computer, and I was looking for other Jews who had entered the church. I was trying to figure out, okay, I know I have to be Catholic, but what do I do with all this Jewish stuff? And I didn't have an experience. I had no idea that there were other Jews who had come into the Catholic Church, because all of the Jews that I knew who came into the church were Messianic Jews, or they went to a mega church, you know, an evangelical Protestant church. So I didn't have any experience, and I had to get a sense of this. I had to understand this. So lo and behold, I get on the internet and I put in a search engine that, you know, Jewish Catholic, and what comes up is the Association of Hebrew Catholics. And it was there that, honestly, that pretty much sealed the deal for me, okay? I contacted David Moss, who's the president of the association, and I started a dialogue with some of the folks from the association on a discussion group. I met Marty Barrick. I read his book. And I began to see that I used to think that the early church, you know, the apostles were Messianic Jews, and they were Messianic Jews, but they were really Hebrew Catholics. They were Messianic Jewish Catholics. You know, they had a love of the Eucharist, and they had a love of the sacraments, and they came, you know, I was beginning to see how Catholicism was the fulfillment of Judaism. And I know you say all the time, Roy, now that I know you, that the Catholic Church is post-Messianic Judaism, and that's I began to see that, you know, and began to feel comfortable. And yeah, were there other questions that had come up while I was, about Mary and so on and so forth? Yeah, there were other questions, but I figured this: if the Catholic Church got it right on the Eucharist, they must have gotten everything else right too. Because that was pivotal. So I pretty much was able to, you know, I didn't struggle too much, because I really just wanted to have communion. I wanted to have the Eucharist. And unfortunately, Roy, this happened a week after Easter. So I had to wait a whole year to go. I had to wait until September to go to RCIA and then come in the following Easter to the church. So it was, and then of course my wife had to go through an annulment process, and that took a little time as well. So it gave us time to kind of to get all that together in God's providence, and you know, the timing was just perfect. And it was an exercise in patience and persistence, and these are all good things to learn as good Catholics. So I was very, very grateful, but I was very happy when I came into the church. So, and it's been a wonderful experience ever since.
Well, we usually take a short break about halfway through the show, and we seem to be at about that point. So why don't we do that, and we'll take a short musical break, and we'll come back and talk some more with my friend Ken, another very enthusiastic and grateful Jewish entrant into the Catholic Church. You've been listening to Radio Maria's show, Salvation is from the Jews. I'm the host, Roy Shulman, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
haunting me. In this prison there's a fight between who I am and who I used to be. The thorn in my side isn't grace. For because of it, the flesh and blood of God was offered in my place. My place. You fought the fight in me. You chased me down and finished the race. I was blind, but now I see. Jesus, you kept the faith in me. Where did my best friends go? My defense, they disappeared just like your friends did to you, oh Lord. But you were there, you gave me strength. So this little one might come to know the glory of your name.
Tune to Radio Maria, a Christian voice in your home. We now return to a rebroadcast of Salvation is from the Jews with Roy Showman.
Hi, welcome back to Salvation is from the Jews. I'm your host, Roy Showman. And we have been speaking with a friend of mine, another very grateful Jewish entrant into the Catholic Church, Ken. And when we took the break, he had pretty much just entered the church formally. And so we'll resume from there. You're there, Ken?
Yes, I'm here.
Great. So tell me, when you were finally able to enter the church after over a year of waiting and after that wonderful spiritual experience actually a mystical grace of having the truth of the Catholic faith kind of just mystically confirmed for you when you were present at a Mass. What was it like when you finally were able to fully participate in the sacraments and receive communion?
It was heavenly, Roy. It's hard to even put into words the anticipation and the preparation that I went through, the prayer. I felt like the only thing that I can compare it to is when I first went into to a Messianic synagogue and I felt like I was home. Well, this was even greater. I'm really home. This is where Jesus is. This is where I belong. And it was just beyond words. I can't even begin to express it, but it was heavenly.
Right. And what about, this is always one of my favorite topics, what about the sacrament of confession?
Quite honestly, to this day, I love confession. The first confession that I went to was right before I came into the church, and to hear the words of absolution from my priest was it gave me so much peace. I still love going to confession. I still get nervous when I go to confession, I must admit. I'm always nervous, but I'm always so grateful to hear those words that I'm forgiven and I've got a fresh start. Just almost like when I first came into the church, when Jesus touched my heart and offered me that forgiveness and that second chance. Now I get it every time I go to confession. It's just an amazing experience. So for me, as I shared earlier, the sacraments, I figured that the church got it right on the Eucharist, and all the other sacraments fall from it. Mary, it makes sense. Everything started to make sense to me. Everything kind of fell into place. That was my biggest battle. After that, everything fell. All the objections fell.
And so what do you do these days to, spread the faith? Are you active in any way with the church?
I am. Flora and I are very active in the Association of Hebrew Catholics. Imagine that, right? We were so grateful. I remember we actually had a chance to meet David and his wife on a trip one time before they had moved to St. Louis. And we became fast friends, and I've always been a friend of the Association of Hebrew Catholics. And now they asked me to join the board. So also my wife and I write a newsletter. We're involved in the Havara movement, which is a movement of small groups of people in the church who are interested in the Jewish roots of the faith and also are from Jewish roots.
So this is
like myself.
These Havarot, to use the Hebrew plural of the singular Havara.
Mm-hmm.
These are like small prayer and study groups or cells of mostly Hebrew Catholics and other Catholics who have a particular interest in the Jewish roots of the church.
Yes, yes, that's exactly right. And we study works like yours and other authors who have written very important works about the Jewish roots of the faith. And there's been a lot of interest in the Jewish roots of our faith recently, thanks be to God. So we're very grateful for all the people who are writing good materials, like yourself and others, who that we can use in all the Havarot around the world. And it's spreading around the world in little pockets. And so it's very exciting to see. So we write a little newsletter. We usually publish that about four times a year, turns out. And we write about what's going on all over the world in the different study groups. And we also write a little blurb about some issues that are pertinent to those who are Hebrew Catholics.
And What business is the Association of Hebrew Catholics in? What are they?
The Association of Hebrew Catholics is a group that is formed to support the study of the Jewish roots and also to support those of Jewish background to come in to the church and feel welcome and know that they're not alone, just like I felt when I came in. I needed to know that I wasn't alone, that this wasn't just some aberration that I had one day. And of course, I learned that there are a lot of other Hebrew Catholics in the church. So sometimes it's a little hard for other Hebrew Catholics to even come out to and say that they are Jewish, you know. So because maybe they're afraid they're going to face persecution or anti-Semitism, whatever the case may be. So the association is there so that people can feel comfortable coming in.
I also
maintain their Jewish identity.
That's right. Because, well, I don't mean that's right. I shouldn't be second guessing you, but it strikes me that there's something very important to simply having a visible Jewish presence in the church, because you know, the Jewish community, which is dead set, of course, against apostasy or Jews entering the church, you know, they always say you can't be Jewish and Christian. It's a contradiction. Or you can't be Jewish and Catholic. Pick one. You have to be one or the other. But that's actually not even biblical. You know, St. Paul was Jewish and Catholic. He was a Jew in the church. I myself am an Israelite, a member of the tribe of Benjamin, right? As he says in Romans 11. So just, and of course it's true of Gentile Catholics too. By the way, early in the show I used the word Goyim in reference to our audience. And I half want to apologize, but really what I want to do is explain that despite some claims to the contrary, Goyim or Goy is not pejorative. It just means the nations. It's the underlying word in the Old Testament, which is translated at times as the nations, you know, like the light from Zion will go out to all the nations. That's to the Goyim. That's to the non-Jews. Right. That's the other nations. And in the New Testament, it tends to be translated as Gentiles. But there's nothing intrinsically pejorative about Goyim. It's just in the context of the covenant between God and the Jewish people before Christ came. Humanity was divided into those in the Jewish covenant who were the Jews, and you know, the descendants of Abraham, and those who were not descendants of Abraham through Isaac, who were the nations of the earth, who were the Goyim.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I think I've forgotten what I was talking about. Oh yes, even for Gentile Catholics, it's it's like illuminating to see that they are Jews in the Catholic Church. And they still think of themselves as Jews, and why shouldn't they be Jews, and why shouldn't they be Catholic? Because being Catholic is not, it's not an ethnic identity really, like being Irish or even being Jewish or, you know, being a Red Sox fan or something else. Catholicism is actually the fully mature, realized relationship between God and man, which God established for all of humanity, for every man and woman on earth. If God had his way, so to speak, to be a human being would be to be Catholic, would be to be in the relationship between God and man, which is only provided through the sacraments of the Catholic Church. So it's Catholic means universal. So,
yes.
So it's not an ethnicity as opposed to the Jewish ethnicity. It's a universal covenant between God and man, which God wants to encompass every ethnicity, including the Jewish ethnicity.
Yes, and to your point, Roy, I often say that to those people, we've now been graced to kind of start two different Havara groups, one in Indianapolis and one in Louisville, Kentucky, and of course most of those folks were non-Hebrew Catholics, right? Non-Jewish Catholics. But what's exciting to me is that when people come, they realize it cements their faith. They realize that it's only the Catholic Church that is the fulfillment. Specifically, it's the Catholic Church that is the fulfillment of Judaism And it's not just mere Christianity. It's not evangelical Protestantism. It's Catholicism. And so it kind of cements their faith. It solidifies their faith. It energizes their faith and also our faith together. And I think this is part of, I like to think of the Havara as part of the new evangelization of the church and part of what God is doing, what the Holy Spirit is doing now in the church, in that this whole idea of unpacking the Jewishness of the church is energizing and it's exciting. And we get a chance to know Jesus in a deeper and more meaningful way maybe than we had before, because you know when you love somebody, Roy, you want to know about them, you want to know all about them, you want to know what their childhood was like, what their upbringing was like, what they felt, what they thought, what their mom and dad was like. And you know, a lot of, I'm not saying that Jewish life today is exactly the way Jewish life was 2,000 years ago, but there's some similarities. And, you know, if somebody grew up Italian or Irish or Polish or whatever, they might not have that same experience. So for those of us who are Jewish in the church, we're able to share that experience with them, and they get a chance to know Jesus in a little different light and a little bit deeper and more and maybe even more meaningful way, and they fall in love with Jesus even deeper, and then they're able to go out and share their faith, which is what God wants us to do.
Beautiful. You know, you're sounding like St. Paul in a way, so because let me just read a passage from Romans 11, which resonates very strongly with what you just said. This is Romans 11, beginning with verse 11, and I'm skipping a couple of verses to maintain the thread. But so I ask, have the Jews who rejected Christ stumbled so as to fall? By no means, but through their trespass salvation has come to the Gentiles. Now their trespass means riches for the world. And if their failure means riches for the Gentiles, how much more will their full inclusion mean? For if their rejection means the reconciliation of the world, what will their acceptance mean but life from the dead? So St. Paul's talking about the same thing, right? When the Jews do enter the church, it'll be an additional blessing for the Gentiles. How much more, if their failure means riches for the Gentiles, how much more will their full inclusion mean? If their rejection meant the reconciliation of the world, what will their acceptance mean but life from the dead? So the Jews entering into the church may well be an intrinsic part, I don't want to say central part, but maybe a central part of the new evangelization.
Right. I know I have a bias. So maybe that's not a fair thing to say, but every time I encounter, we start these new Havaran, we encounter Catholics who are just so excited about the Jewishness of the faith and the Jewish roots and how this fulfillment, it's one history. It's not, you know, Jewish and then Christian. It's one salvation history. And they just they come alive. It just they beam after that, and they're very grateful, and they're very very appreciative and very supportive of those of us who are Jewish in the church. And you know, we are a very, very small minority still, and it's nice to have that support and encouragement as believers.
Amen. But I will also, perhaps at the risk of sounding a little biased, point out that it wasn't the case in the early church. We were the huge majority then. So we're coming back to the way things, I don't want to say we came back to the way things started out, but there's certainly a kind of a sense of a cycle returning, of a wheel returning to, you know, where it started out with more Jews entering the church. And I will also put in a little plug for paragraph 674 of the New Catechism says, the glorious Messiah's coming is suspended at every moment of history until his recognition by all Israel, which is the church teaching, the totally kosher Catholic church teaching. The second coming can't happen until there's a widespread conversion of the Jews. You know, a wholesale, if you excuse the pun, entry of Jews into the church, which again suggests this sense of what will their acceptance mean but life from the dead, as St. Paul put it. Now, if some of our listeners are interested in finding out more about the Chavurah movement or the existence of these Chavurah groups and may want to find out if there's one in their area or may even, you know, want to start one or find out about starting one, what should they do?
Well, the Association of Hebrew Catholics has a website. It's HebrewCatholic.org. And then there's a category you can click on. The even on the front page, there's a little picture of my wife and I for the newsletter. And so if you click on that, it'll take you to all the other categories of the Chavurah and all of the pamphlets and all the literature and so on and so forth. In fact, Roy, we just had a brand new Chavurah get started in Houston, Texas. So there's you know, all over now, people are saying, okay, I don't have a Chavurah in my city. Maybe God is calling me to start one.
What are some of the cities where there are groups?
There is Louisville, Indianapolis, Houston, Texas. There's Toronto. There's Moncton, Canada, in New Brunswick. There's out in British Columbia, Canada. We've got a group in St. Louis, of course, Missouri. We've got some Minnesota. We've got California. We've got Australia. We've got New Zealand. So there, and I think there's one in Belgium. So, and I probably left out a couple, but those are the ones that come to my mind.
And there's still some market opportunities for people who want to start
themselves. Oh, I would say, yes.
So yes. We're coming towards the end of the show. I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to share with our listeners or leave them with.
Well, I do, and I think I touched on it when I was sharing my story, but oftentimes Catholics have this aversion to evangelization, or what they think of as evangelization, because they watch some of our evangelical Protestant brothers and sisters, you know, they're much, much bolder than we are in general. But that invitation, all somebody had to do was invite us to church. And God does the rest. God got a hold of my heart in the breaking of the bread. He opened my heart up in the breaking of the bread at the words of consecration, and you know, and when we invite people to Mass and to experience the sacraments, it's God uses that in miraculous ways. So we shouldn't think of Mass as, you know, well, they won't understand it and they won't know what to do and when to stand and when to genuflect. That's okay. I didn't know that either. But I learned that along the way. What was important is that God revealed himself to me, and God will reveal himself to all those who are earnestly seeking his truth. And, you know, if he did it for me, he can do it for anybody. So that would be maybe the last thing I would like to share.
And all it took was, you know, would you like to come with us to church?
Yeah,
and
invitation.
If I can shed a little selfish light on this, those people who invited you are going to be rewarded for all eternity for having said that to you, for having simply said to you, would you like to come to church with us? Yeah, 100 million years from now, you know, their mansion is going to have a little, you know, whatever, pearl doorway, which they only have because they said that to you.
Yes.
So.
Yes, I believe that.
So, and anyone that you influence, by the way, this whole thing is like one of those sales pyramid schemes, because any evangelization you do, anyone you influence, they get their percentage of your percentage, you know, like Tupperware
right.
parties. So, so evangelization is really a really good deal. And, there's no better return, you know, there's no better return than just to invite someone or to share the faith, just, you know, if as it comes up in the conversation, because one of the tragedies is that You know, many people, including many Catholics, tend to be shy and tend to think that they'd offend somebody if they talk about God or they talk about religion. But everybody in the world is dying, and very often quite literally dying, for what a Catholic in a state of grace has and may not even be aware that they have. And all it may take is an invitation or simply just not hiding your faith under a bushel basket, but letting people know that what makes you you is your Catholic faith, what makes you happy is the sacraments, what makes you peaceful is the teaching of the Church, the knowledge about the redemptive value of suffering. The beginning of your witness testimony, by the way, was very moving because you talked about that, having no place to go with your suffering. You had no sense of the redemptive value of suffering. You didn't understand how God could be God and there could still be so much suffering in your life.
Yes.
So all of these
I understand it now. I'm grateful for the experience because it ultimately brought me into the kingdom of God.
Yeah, that's right. And we know as Catholics that nothing buys grace. Nothing is more productive for eternity than suffering, you know, accepted properly and united with the suffering of Christ. Padre Pio said, if man knew the true value of suffering, he would never pray for anything else. But of course, we're not Padre Pio, so I like that. Instead, we pray to escape suffering. But still, when it comes, we know what it's for and what to do with it. So, anyway, let me thank you from the bottom of my heart for joining us on the show and for everything you said and for all of the edification and learning that our listeners will have realized from it. And let me thank our listeners, too, for having been with us. And invite you to listen again next week to Salvation is from the Jews. If you would like to hear the show over again, it is archived on the Radio Maria website, radiomaria.us, and also on my website, salvationisfromthejews.com, as are all of the previous shows of Salvation is from the Jews. So anyway, if you want to listen to old shows, go to salvationisfromthejews.com or radiomaria.us. And if you want to listen to new shows, tune in again next week to Salvation is from the Jews. This is Roy Shoman. Bye for now.
You're tuned to Radio Maria, a Christian voice in your home. The program you just heard was a rebroadcast of Salvation is from the Jews with Roy Shoman.